Welcome back to episode 4 of season 2 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. Today we'll be doing a post-race recap into my marathon out in Copenhagen this past weekend. Tom talks of a great trip to the mountains and Callum continues to make progress on his return back from his ruptured Achilles. How are we doing, boys?
I didn't rupture it, Ben. It was just a partial tear. That's fake news.
Fake news.
Good,
Get it right. Come
good,
on.
good,
Bit of
good. In
hyperbole.
yeah, good intro, but not. We can't clickbait it, unfortunately.
No.
But yeah, no, I'm all good, boys. How are you? How are you respectively doing?
Yeah, all good. Enjoying
Yeah.
a nice Friday. So we've managed to literally put this podcast down to the wire. We're posting it Saturday morning at 6 a.m. and we're recording at 4:15 on the Friday. So yeah, good work, lads. Managed to get it
Yeah,
done.
needs must day. I
Exactly.
don't know about you boys, but I'm enjoying the weather, to be honest.
It
Yeah,
is
it's lovely out there.
absolutely
Fantastic.
class. Absolutely
Oh,
class.
yeah, you can't beat it. I wait when if I wake up in the morning and the sun is streaming through the window at like 6:30, 7. My God, it's just a joy to be alive, isn't
Yeah,
it?
just getting outside in shorts, you know. Go walking, getting a coffee, or like, you know, going out and having a little drink in the evening or something. It just doesn't get better than that. It is a self-employed person's dream, or a remote worker's dream, in fact, because even people that are full-time, I guess you can open your window or maybe move your desk outside or something like that.
Yeah, it is
Just having
exceptional.
lunch outside is, yeah, it's a game changer.
Yeah, no, it really is. I hope all of our listeners who are based in the UK or another place where the weather is nice are also enjoying the sunshine as much as we are.
It might have changed by the time they listen to this, though. You know what the weather's like here.
Yeah, true.
Tomorrow it'll be thunderstorms and people getting wet on the long runs, no doubt.
The problem is we're having this spell of lovely weather now where the whole week has been gorgeous. The weekend looks great, but it's the weekend before Night of the 10Ks in Hackney Half, which is ominous, if you
Oh
ask
yeah,
me.
that's always warm. Hackney
Yeah.
Half is always hot.
But I'm wondering now if because we're having this spell now, it means next weekend is going to be an absolute washout, a horror show
I don't
from a weather
know.
perspective.
What's the weather saying? Have you had a look? Let me have a look. London. Here we go.
This is
Sick.
great radio, isn't it?
Live weather forecast for
So
the
what?
Hackney Half.
Oh, it's only giving me up to Thursday the 19th there. But
You need a
yes,
10-day.
it is still looking. Yeah, this is Met Office. This it's still looking quite warm. So yeah, 18 degrees. But I guess they don't race till late in the evening, do they? So yeah, should be pretty exciting. You're both gonna try and make it down if possible, aren't you?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, we'll be there
Get down,
100%.
have some of the action. It's always
Yeah.
worth going down to.
I'm technically racing Hackney Half.
Oh,
Well,
yeah.
what do you mean you're technically racing? You're racing or not?
You've got a
I'm in the
bib.
race, but I'm pacing. We did a competition on ProDirect, right, along with our good friends at Hoka, to give someone a chance to win a place to Hackney, get all the kit, all of
To be
that
paced
jazz,
by Tom Foley.
and then
Cool.
also
What a
get
prize.
paced to a PB. So we had to choose someone who had a PB in mind that I could obviously run. And we've done that, and yeah, so I'll be on the start line
Oh,
of
so
Hackney
it
Half.
wasn't random then. You actually selected someone.
Well,
What's the be careful what you say here.
No. It's all well and good. Don't you worry. It's all above board.
Here's a fix.
No.
ProDirect fixes their
it
giveaways. You
literally
heard it here first.
it
That's the
does.
title of the
I'm not
podcast.
gonna lie, it does sound like a fix. Tom literally said, he literally went, we had to choose somebody that I could run. So anyone who was faster than you. Or you couldn't be asked if they were too slow. You've just sacked you've just sacked them off from the giveaway. ProDirect are in the mud, I'm telling
Let's
you.
focus on the positive, shall we? It's going to be a lovely day out, and someone's going to get a fantastic PB out of the occasion. So there we go.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
No, yeah,
what time are you pacing?
I think it's going to be sub 1:30 is the goal. So if anybody wants to join in and jump on the train, then more the merrier, I reckon.
Yeah, as long
What sort of
as long,
pace is that? I don't know, really.
oh, like
Four
six,
something.
no, yeah, it's at 6:45 miling or something like that.
Nice.
I
I'll
think.
be down there as well. My little sister's having a crack at the 2-hour barrier as well. So I'll be down spectating on the course. Hopefully, it's not too warm, though.
No, I'll
Yeah,
give you a little high five on the way
it
past.
should be pretty tasty actually. The Saw race team are trying to trying to clean up the podium, so I'm told.
They've
got a lot of big guns out that are just trying. Well, they're not going to have to run that fast relative to their PBs to do well, I don't think. But they'll all be out at the front of the race. I think Soren
dominated the podium.
They're trying to make it a little bit of a thing, yeah. Which is good. It's exciting to see some faster runners in the race. And it was actually, Becky Briggs was telling me, like, even as a runner of her caliber, she just couldn't get an entry. Like, it is sold out. Like, you can't even email in saying, I'm an elite, blah, blah, blah. They're like, sorry, no capacity. So, she's managed to find one in the end, but sounds like a very popular event.
It is. I think it's because it's East London, isn't it? So it's always going to appeal to a certain demographic, but then it's also just a good time of year, isn't it, for people who are, I don't know, not necessarily fair weather runners, but May is a lovely time.
You can say it, fair weather runner. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? You're going to get more people signing up to a half marathon, you know, towards the end of May, middle of May in Hackney than you are in February at Dorney Lake. It's just, you know, just the way it is. But results-wise, it's going to be interesting because I've got last year? Yeah, last year's up.
65 minutes, something like that for the winner, wasn't it?
Just under 67. Sam Bramwell, he ran 67.56 for the win.
Good on Sam Bramwell, but for an event with tens of thousands of people in, you know, a massive city, it needs to be getting one quicker than that. So it'll be good to have some athletes that maybe do, I don't know, 65 or 64 or something like that.
Be nice.
Because then next year people will look at it and go, oh, it must be a good course. Some guys did it in 64, and then you get the snowball effect. So hopefully that'll be good for the event as a whole. And it's a Hoka event, isn't it?
It is indeed. Hoka partnered with it. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm sure I'm sure whether it's next year or whenever, I'm sure they'll try and encourage some athletes to do it as well, which could be good.
Yeah. Fantastic. We sort of dive straight in there, but I guess we should probably talk about Mr. Ben Felton and his marathon escapades in Copenhagen.
Yeah, definitely. And I've just watched your video before the podcast, actually, Ben, to kind of prepare of the one where you're talking about what you did the day before. And what it made me think is, anyone who's listening to the podcast, if you want a blow-by-blow account of what he did the day before, and I'm sure he's doing similar-ish on the race day, we're not, like, go and watch it on YouTube, because then you're going to actually get the, you know, full detail. You don't need to rehear it here. I think the best way to do this, rather than Ben talk us through everything, is to pick up on a few kind of key points, i.e. the performance, and then a few other things that were different, like your elite start, or like specifics of what went wrong or what went well, maybe stuff that maybe isn't mentioned in other content you've got, Ben, if that works.
That sounds good.
Just because I watched your video and I was like, literally there's no point sitting here and being like, what did you do the day before, because you've made you've made a whole video about it, and it visually shows you, you know, scrounging some oats and shit like that.
You enjoyed it, mate.
But I think a synopsis of your race would be a good place to start. I.e., what time did you run? Did you, you know, what's your gut feeling a week afterwards on if it was a success or a failure, etc.?
Yeah, definitely. So going into the race, I thought I was going to have a little bash at like around 2:22, 2:23. And that's the sort of pace I set off with. Got to about 25K and I knew it probably wasn't going to be my day. I had some stomach issues similar to what I had at Valencia maybe 2 years ago now. It's mainly, I think, to do with maybe a slight weakness there at running that sort of pace. So it's something I need to work on. Ran 2:27:48, something like that, which was an all right performance. It was, I think we were discussing it last time on the podcast. It was like, what are you going to do if it's an okay performance? And that's kind of what I got from it. It wasn't a bad performance. Like, I didn't completely blow up and run something like 2:40, something like that. But I didn't absolutely nail it on the head and run in the low 2:20s like I was perhaps hoping for. So yeah, all in all, it was a good experience, good learning curve. I think it was my second fastest marathon out of the five that I've done. So it wasn't a complete success, but not a failure. And yeah, I think I finished like 29th out of 15,000. So when you put it into perspective, it wasn't a bad run, but it wasn't quite what I was hoping for, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. You didn't. It's funny, actually, because I mean this in the nicest way possible, although it does sound like I'm completely taking a piss, but the which is never a good way to caveat a sentence, I know. But the graphic that I made to go on the Instagram, I originally had it obviously I was backing you, wasn't I? So I originally had it at like breaking 2:23, and then I was looking at the live tracker and I was like, oh shit, I was like, might have to revise that to 2:24 now. And then I did about 20 revisions of it. And then you can tell in the end, I was just like, oh, sod it. I was like, he's definitely finishing under 2:30 because I know he's not going to die that badly. So I was like, rather than wait and put like 2:26, 2:28, whatever it's going to be, I was like, I'm just going to go for 2:30 and I've covered all bases there. But what I'm trying to say is you didn't completely capitulate, i.e. when I saw your pace was slowing down, I was like, okay, he's slowing down, but he's not had to stop to walk. You know, he's not run he's not done an 8-minute mile or whatever. He's still, you know, functioning at a pretty good speed. So I think you should be pretty pleased, to be honest. Like, it's 2:28 after a bit of a comeback. I'm sure there's things that you want to change in your training or, you know, the pacing and stuff on the day. But I think you should be pleased, mate, because it could have gone a lot, lot worse.
Yeah, I think overall I was pretty chuffed with it. Like, to run a marathon again, I think that was the first one I've done in like 14 months. So it was good just to cover the distance again. And it just reminded me of how brutal it was. I feel like I was fitter than the result that I got in terms of time, but in terms of my body wasn't quite ready for the distance because I hadn't done it in a little while. So like in terms of the strength and conditioning, my core routine, there's already stuff basically I've taken from the race that I know I could improve on that would hopefully have allowed me to maintain that sort of low 3:20 pace for a bit longer. Because I think, about 25K into the race, I was like, oh God, got some real bad cramp in here. I'm going to have to slow this down. Otherwise, I'm not going to make it to the finish line. So that was probably the earliest that's happened in a marathon. Usually I get to around 30, 35K and you start to really feel it. But after about 25K, I was already in the hurt locker, which was a shock to me, to be honest.
Yeah,
and
a question.
Stomach cramps, you're saying, are the main culprit.
Yeah, it's not really like it's not in the gut, it's mainly in the muscles themselves. I think when running at sort of like low 3:20s, like it feels comfortable, but just my body isn't used to maintaining that sort of speed for a long period of time. So just need to work on that moving forward, really.
Do you think do you think your fueling had anything to do with it?
I don't think so, because I had practiced it a little bit in my training, but obviously it is a new experience, like taking on fuel every 3.5K type thing, which is not what I'm used to. So maybe that had a factor as well, but I think it was mainly a lack of preparation in core strength, to be honest with you. Looking back at my training, I only did my core routine probably once every 2 weeks, whereas when I ran 2:24 in Boston, I was doing it two or three times a week. So I think that I kind of got exposed a little bit in terms of there was a weakness there that I just hadn't covered that base in my training, and it sort of came back to bite me in the race.
Yeah, definitely. Well, at least you found, or hopefully there's some correlation between like not doing something and then the negative result, because obviously, well, fingers crossed that was the issue, because that's pretty easy to fix rather than it being another variable. And I guess the other thing is, like, when you set off at a challenging pace, i.e. regardless of what shape you thought you were in, you've gone off at faster than you've ever run a marathon before in your life. You're putting your body into the unknown, I guess. And
definitely.
That mixed with, you know, your anxiety or a bit of nerves, or the fact that, you know, the terrain you're going over, I don't know what the course is like specifically, but let's say you went over some cobbles or there was a few corners or like all that sort of stuff, I guess, is something that you can't necessarily emulate directly in training, unless you exactly know what the course is going to be like and stuff. So, I think there's definitely things that you can work on that you now need to importantly identify, rather than just hide away and be like, oh, it was just because it was my first one back, which is, I know what you're not going to do. You're very honest about like, yeah, I'm shit at X, Y, and Z. I need to improve it. And that's the only way you're going to get better in it.
Yeah. And I think the race was also quite a messy race. Like, I had a plan going into it that I was going to sit with a pacer for the first 30K. And basically, the way the race panned out, the first 5K, we were sat in nicely behind the pacer, and then he got asked to pull back because the elite ladies had decided they didn't want to run at that pace on the day. So I went from being in a group of about five or six guys for the first 5K to then suddenly being on my own, which was like, oh, that's a very early stage in the race to be solo. I think I was with one other person at the time. So I had to make the decision, do I slow down to drop back to that sort of 3:30K pace, or do I try and move forward a little bit and try and catch up with the group in front, which is what I did. So I think between like 6 and 15K, I was trying to catch up with a group in front of me. So probably in hindsight, I may have burnt a match a bit early on there, just trying to close that gap. I tried to do it as slowly and as gradually as I could, rather than just one surge to sort of close that 300-meter gap. But yeah, looking back at the race, the first 30K didn't quite pan out how I'd maybe planned it in my head. I had to do a bit too much work on my own, and yeah, probably pushed a little bit too hard in those sort of 6 to 15K mark.
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, these are all like interesting things that I think, I don't know if I'm sure you're going to talk about them in a YouTube video and stuff like that. But for me, that's way more interesting than like the certain things that are applicable to all marathons, right? Like if you're getting a bottle every 5K, it's pretty much the same in every single marathon, and what you're going to have, how you're going to get it, all that sort of stuff. Whereas the intricacies of, like, you know, specifics of how the race panned out is stuff that is pretty hard to articulate to people, I think, because unless you've been, most people that listen to this in the nicest way possible are in the masses, and in any race they do will be surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands of people, and trying to get across how it feels to be like alone, or having to make those decisions of like, should you catch someone up, should you slow down, etc., I think is actually really interesting.
Yeah, it definitely makes a big difference on how the race sort of pans out. Like, I can remember Boston Marathon, I was with a group basically until 35K, so it was like just get in and switch off. Whereas early on in this race, I had to do quite a lot of expelled like quite a lot of mental energy, thinking, shall I catch up? Shall I slow down? Am I going too fast? Like, what do I do in this situation? So I think it wasn't as straightforward as previous marathons have been, maybe.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And not to move straight away from this marathon, but I did see in this video, not to take all the content for everyone, but you're on about doing a marathon in October. What's all this about? And the marathons you listed were some kind of rogue ones, I'm not going to lie. So what, have you got some sort of, were they listed because you've got, again, not trying to say it's a bad thing, but have you got some sort of like brand opportunities? Have you identified that there may be the overall a bit slower so you can finish a bit higher and that's going to be better? Or like, are they just ones that you fancy at that time of year?
Yeah, no, they're just ones I've had a look at in sort of the plan is always to do two marathons this year, one in the early stage of the year, then do some track stuff, work on 5K, 10K speed, and then do another marathon towards the end of the year. So I think around October time was when I was looking, and they were just some of the marathons that I saw were had a decent field and were fairly flat. So
what were they? What ones were you looking at?
One's Cologne Marathon. There's one in Eindhoven, all very, very flat. They might not have the biggest, like, in terms of elite field, but they'll be more than quick enough for the likes of myself. So, yeah, maybe one of them, or even try and get into Berlin in September time.
I was literally just going to say that. I was like, honestly, if you don't care about what position you finish in, i.e. like, it's not for a content purpose of trying to come in the top 20 or do this or do that, just get in the possible fastest one. And surely you've got some brand strings that you can pull to be like, look, it's a week earlier, it's like end of September, isn't it, Berlin? So to get to do that rather than doing a random untried and tested marathon a week later, I would just try and do that, honestly, because it's not going to get any faster than that, is it?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, basically want to try and get one early sort of autumn winter time, and then could even have the opportunity of doing one towards the back end of the year, like a Valencia or something like that. So that was my thinking. Yeah.
Three in a year, man. That's sick.
Whoa.
And I mean sick in the nastiest possible way as well. Not like that is sick as in slang. That's mentally sick. Tom, you're not doing a marathon or anything, are you, lad?
No, that's what I was gonna one of my main questions to you, Ben, whether you're like dead set on the marathon now, and that is your distance, that is like your A goal. Every year is going to be the marathon, and you are a marathoner who does a track season to get quicker for the marathon. Is that still pretty much your approach? And if so, why? The obsession with the marathon?
I don't know really, but it definitely is my priority to be like the best marathon runner that I can be. Like 5 and 10K stuff doesn't. Like, obviously, I want to get faster if I can over those distances, but it doesn't motivate me as much as like nailing a 26-mile race. I think there's a lot that goes into it. I'll just enjoy the preparation and the longer training miles and stuff like that. Just a preference really, and where I see my sort of focus around each sort of section of the year become is like going to be focused more around a marathon, and then the 5K and 10K races are more of just like to supplement that training, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
do you ever
I do.
would you consider like just going away, going to 10K training, etc., for a longer period of time and getting the PBs that you think you need to then be able to step up and run the really good marathon times, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely
Because
think that could be a.
surely every time you do, I know everyone says that, oh, if you marathon train, you get faster at everything, but like in the, again, in the nice way possible, that's for beginner and very amateur runners, because normally if you do marathon training, you just do more running than you usually do. But obviously the faster you're getting, and when you want to run eventually, I don't know, 216, 217, whatever you can run, you're going to have to be comfortably under 30 for 10K, comfortably under, you know, I don't know, 14, 15, 14, 20 for 5K. Do you think that if you went away and just did a year where you did maybe half marathon is the longest distance you did and everything else was 5K, 10K, you'd actually be in a better position to then, I don't know, smack out something really good at Valencia or something?
Yeah, definitely, quite possibly. I think the way I look at it, sort of each year, is if I can just take a couple of minutes off the marathon distance, that's going to be more than enough to keep me motivated in that sort of across that sort of distance. Whereas, yeah, like 5K, 10K stuff, I always see that I can come back to. Like, whereas if you're going to run a marathon, you have to train for a marathon. Whereas I can run a 5K like at any given point throughout the year. Obviously, it won't be at my optimal. In terms of performance, but I don't see it as having as big enough as effect. So, yeah, just prefer the marathon slog, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
Yeah, interesting.
it's interesting because I get why, like, and you enjoy it, and ultimately that's the main thing that's guiding your running. I don't think it's optimal for performance at all. I don't think it's close to optimal,
Yeah.
because I think if you were to look at like what equivalent times you're going to need to run a faster marathon, I don't think you're giving yourself enough time to bring those down, if you know what I mean. So like, it's great to run a marathon in, you know, end of April. And then to say, oh, I'm going to do some track stuff, I'm going to get my 5 and 10K down. But then if you're racing another one on the, I don't know, 1st of October, 6th of October, whatever, your marathon training's actually starting in when? August, July, or something like that, if you're going to get 12 weeks in. So really, you're asking a lot of yourself to, between the end of April and the start of July, to do anything meaningful on your 5 and 10K. Like, yeah, you might actually get a PB and take a few seconds off or whatever, but are you giving yourself enough time every year to substantially get it down to the level you need? I don't potentially know. And obviously I'm no expert. It's just my like opinion on it. But you know, you're young enough that I'm sure if it doesn't work after a couple of years and you think you need to change things, then you can. You got time.
Yeah, definitely. I think the main thing for me comes down to like enjoyment. The way I structure my season, if you like, is I do a marathon at the start of the year where there's not much going on, and then when the track stuff sort of kicks in with my club Chelmsford, I like to do the 5K and 3Ks just to score some points with the team, work on a bit of speed, and then yeah, naturally I just set fire myself end up targeting a marathon towards the end of the year
I
when
get
things tie
it.
down a little bit. So.
I do get it. I do get it. And again, my job on this podcast is just to be as harsh and as brutally honest as possible. But I think that you would enjoy more going to bed at night knowing that you've smacked out a 2:14 marathon and that you are the dog's bollocks because for 2 years you sacrificed it and you trained like a proper runner, rather than being 60 and looking back on your back catalogue of Insta360 Go videos and you only ever ran 2:19 high. Do you know what I mean? That's that, but that maybe that's just who, what do I know? I'm just a 25-year-old bloke sat on his sofa. You know, I could be.
I love the idea of Ben as like an OAP with just a drawer full of like old Insta360 cameras that have all died along the years. He's
And
just
here's
got
the
like
one
all.
I did for this marathon.
Yeah, it's people who've got photo albums. Ben's just got loads of little
In the care home
Insta360.
with Edith watching back Copenhagen 2021. Okay, here it comes. This is the bit where I started walking. I remember Valencia 2021 very well.
But
No.
to answer your question directly, Cal, I'm not interested in a marathon anytime soon at all, almost deliberately, because every time a marathon comes around, whether it's spectating at London, whether it was going to Valencia last year, whether it's like watching the Copenhagen stream, which was fantastic, by the way, like that little voice in the back of your head is always like, oh, do a marathon. Go on, just fucking sign up for a marathon. That's what everybody's doing. It's all everybody really cares about if you run a decent marathon. So just bloody sign up for one, bang some miles, and you know, see what you can do. But I don't really want to. I'd much rather like race more over shorter distances, because at the minute I'm only running like 70, 75, up to 80k a week. For me to go into any sort of marathon prep would mean like a considerable increase in volume to be prepared to run anything like what I would want to run if I was going to attempt a marathon, if that makes sense. So for me at the moment, I'm not, I love them. I love watching them. And it's always there in the back of the head, like, oh, fucking hell, I do definitely need to like have a good one. But yeah, not anytime soon. But
yeah, I think it applies to runners of all levels as well, because like, as much as I sit and I slightly take the piss, like I do the exact same equivalent in other events for me. Like I see a road 10K or whatever, and I'm like, oh, maybe this winter, well, obviously not now I'm injured, but imagine I'm not. I'd be like, I'd say to a coach, like, oh, maybe instead of, you know, this cross country race, like maybe we go for a really fast 10K this summer, this autumn or whatever. And then after like a week after we've had the conversation, something will click in my brain and I'll go, yeah, you only said that because you just watched, you know, a fast 10K race, or your mate had just done a PB or whatever, and you thought, oh yeah, that you'd give that a good go. Like, do you actually want to do that? Or does that make any sense in your season? No, it absolutely doesn't, you know? And then if you don't have a soundboard, like a coach or a group of mates or a podcast or whatever, where you can get feedback from other people, I can see how it is easy to convince yourself, like, oh, the grass is always greener in running, isn't it? What you're doing right now, there's always a nicer alternative that would give you more fulfillment. But often I think, actually, it wouldn't. So I'm sat here telling Ben, you should do this, do that. But it might not make him any happier than what he's doing now. And like you said, that's the main thing in the end. We always assume that another option is going to give us either better results or give us, you know, something that we don't currently have.
Yeah. It's interesting though, like there's parallels, like when Ben, you were talking about cramp and the things that you were dealing with in your stomach, just from listening to so many bloody Aussie running podcasts. I remember Brett Robinson talking about having the exact same sort of stomach issues at the exact same point, or at a, you know, very similar point of every single marathon, of like cramp, but not really cramp, sort of just abdominal pain, but it didn't seem to be caused by nutrition. He could do all the strength and conditioning under the sun and nothing seemed to make much difference. And he just learned to manage it. But then what you were talking about, Callum, with stepping away from the marathon, again, made me think of Jack Rayner, who I think he ran 2:11, 2:12, something like that in the marathon, like a while ago, like 2018, 2019. And then I've got his World Athletics profile up here, actually. And he DNF'd the Tokyo Marathon at the Olympics. And then ever since then, which is 2021, he hasn't done another marathon since. But he's lowered his 10,000-meter time to 27:09 in that space of time. So you've got to think, if he stepped up to the marathon again, like he's in Aussie record territory, and he turns that 2:11, 2:12 into, you know, a 2:07, 2:06, potentially even, based off the times that he's running across 5 and 10K, 13 low and 27 low.
The only caveat I'd give to that is, and again, you don't know until you try. So it's like in the same way that I can't sit here and say, oh, well, I'm faster than you guys at 5 and 10, so I'd smash you at a marathon. Well, I don't know until I've done it, you know? And not everyone is built for that. So for example, Ailish McColgan, like, she's running incredible half marathon time, like blisteringly quick female marathon time, half marathon time. But when she tried to convert to the marathon in her first couple of attempts, and she tried to do the longer training, for whatever reason, she just got injured and injured and injured and couldn't quite do it. Now, it's not to say that she never will do it, and hopefully she will. She's our most talented, or one of our most talented British runners. But you have to think, okay, what are the other variables? Maybe her biomechanics let her down when you double the distance from half to marathon, and maybe that's when she gets injured. Maybe it's, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I think in the same way that you can say there is correlation, and we're saying like, oh, Ben, get a faster 10K and you'll get a faster marathon. You know, Phil Sesseman does not have anywhere near close the best 10K. He's not the best 10K runners in the UK. but he's one of the best marathon runners in the UK. And I could think of a lot of people that would smoke him over 10K that would be 4, 5, 6 minutes away from him on a marathon. So there's not always that direct correlation. Sometimes people are really good at holding together, you know, 5 minute miling or 4:50 miling for 26 miles. But if you asked them to do 4:15 miling three times, they'd struggle. So yeah, I guess he's horses for courses in some aspects, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess the moral of the story, just fucking do what you like, you know, do what makes your heart sing when it comes to running. And, you can't go too far wrong, can you?
Yeah, do what you like, but also experiment. That's the only thing. That's the only reason why I'm prodding Ben. It's just because, like, he's in a nice routine at the moment where he's like, oh, I'll do a marathon in the spring and then I'll do this in the summer and that in the autumn. And that's fine. But, like, you know, maybe at some point after you've done that three or four cycles, you have to go, okay, maybe this year, 2027, is the year that I'm going to do something different. And I see a lot of content online where people get into the routine of, like, okay, I do double thresholds, or on Wednesdays I do this, or every block I only do 12 weeks of running. It's like, just because you have one nice system and your brain thinks that, like, yeah, this is how you should do it. And I understand that, like, having certainty and stability is nice for everyone. Sometimes you just got to think, right, if I want to improve, I've got to change something. What? And sometimes the change can be somewhat radical. That being said, Ben, I'm sure that you're going to get your PB down and down. I'm just saying, in an ideal world, I reckon you could go a bit quicker. But there we go. Marathon chat. We're a marathon podcast now.
You did look fabulous, though, Ben. I will say that much. That saw kit with the sunnies and the Met speeds. You sort of were matters, a vision. Mate. Oh, absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
And speaking of things that were beautiful, Tom, you were in some beautiful mountains recently.
Great segue. Yes, I was. Yeah. Do you know what? It feels like ages ago. I forgot that was only last week. But yeah, I was in St. Moritz in Switzerland for, well, how many days? Like 3 whole days, but 4 days in total, I think. And it was bloody lovely. Yeah, it's not a bad place.
What were you doing there? We don't need a blow-by-blow, but what was the theme of why you were there?
We were invited out there by On, and it was sort of cut into two streams, I suppose. One of those was to visit the HQ in Zurich and get shown around, like, the labs that they've got there and how they make prototypes and upcoming products and all that sort of stuff. And then hopped on the train from Zurich to St. Moritz and spent a little bit of time with the OAC Europe squad, but mainly focused on George Mills. So that was, yeah, that's how it was split. And it was a bloody good trip, to be honest. I can't say a bad word about it from an organization standpoint, from scenery, like weather, everything was pretty spot on. And yeah, there were a few nice little moments. We ended up, as you do when you're in a hub for running like that, bumping into some familiar faces. And Kira McGeehan took myself and Lewis Collins, videographer at ProDirect, out for dinner on our final night, which was very nice.
Why'd she do that for? Yeah.
Well,
I would say thank you for the video that you made with her.
Bingo.
I can't remember.
Probably because she's getting racks on racks from New Balance. And these
it
two,
was an emotional one.
And in St. Moritz, it cost about 800 quid for a pizza. these two paupers were probably just on the still waters. So Kira thought, I better ring up New Balance and see if we got the budget to take them out for dinner.
Yeah, it was good. It was really nice. And you're right, Ben. It was for what we did when we worked with her last year at Budapest for the World Champs. So it was nice to have spoken. We watched a track session. Well, we're filming a track session with George Mills and the other OAC guys on the track down in Chiavenna, downhill a bit, which obviously the climate's going to be a little bit different from upper mountain to not upper mountain. But it was like 13 or 14 degrees difference in the temperature. It was like 20 degrees plus at Chiavenna and bloody freezing cold. I did a run that morning with Danny Franks in St. Moritz, and it was, I think, the thermometer thing on a pharmacy is at -2. So we jumped a hell of a lot of degreeage. So it was quite a tricky one to pack for, to be honest, from a clothing standpoint.
What were sports shoes doing there? Same thing?
Similar. Yeah, similar. So it was, there were a few different accounts out there, and everybody had, I suppose, pitched for different athletes, different access, that sort of stuff. And we went for George Mills. I think it was a good decision. And yeah, it was nice. Like the track session they did was pretty spicy. They're all in shape. And George, I guess the biggest thing you learn from someone like that is just his mentality is so, he's so laser focused, just in the little decisions. Like I say, it was hot. We were sweating buckets in shorts and t-shirt. And he did the entire track session, which was like 7 by a K and then 8 by 300. He did the whole session in long tights, a long sleeve, and then a t-shirt over the top of that, like the whole thing. So he does things to make it deliberately harder and acclimate himself.
So did you ask him why he did that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he did it to make it harder. And also, obviously, you've got to think Paris is going to be probably pretty hot, pretty humid, pretty uncomfortable. And I think he's racing in Marrakesh as well. So it's going to be 29, 30 degrees there. So it's just all the little decisions I guess be best prepared for any sort of eventualities. So yeah, good lad. Eat some bizarre food. I love it. I respect it. But Christ, they had a Tupperware pot at the track, which had, I think it was rice, blackberries, boiled eggs, and maybe some like nuts on top, and some kimchi as well. Actually, can't forget the kimchi, and that was his lunch for straight after the session. So again, proper dialed just on everything: nutrition, sleep, training. Yeah, loves it.
Fair enough. That's an interesting Tupperware box full of food. I wouldn't be eating that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. look, it's
different approach to Callum. I don't reckon he'd have a Tupperware with blueberries and rice in it.
Yeah, but then the thing is that also neither would a lot of like 328 1500 meter runners that would beat Mills.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, George is gonna do amazing. And I put in, I don't know if you guys saw the Instagram post I put today on the podcast account, but I put a thing saying Tom has now met two of the three favorites for the European champs, which I genuinely think is true, like Jakob, Nordas, and George Mills in the 5K. Of course, there's other amazing runners as well from Europe, but you've got to think they're three massive standouts. I know Nordas has not run yet 5K this year. Well, neither is Jakob, to be fair, but he is what he is. And I think Mills can definitely get a medal. Like, I think he's he's an insane athlete. He's so strong, but he can run 330 for 1500. So, you know, I don't blame him that he's preparing for the Paris heat, because in theory, you should absolutely walk in the park at British champs, because what are you going to do? Outrun him? Well, you can't. What are you going to do? Outsprint him? Well, you can't. You know, he's formidable. He's fantastic. But that being said, I just because, again, I think it's good to have balance and people to understand there's a variety of different approaches to get the same result. There is people that would have done that with their top off, got a tan and enjoyed it, and got the same result out of the session. And there is people that, rather than have a Tupperware full of all that afterwards, would have gone and got chicken and potatoes from a local restaurant and had a coffee or whatever, and will also get the same results from it. So just to offer some balance, because I think sometimes it can go down the whole, like, I don't know how to describe it. You know, like all the trend at the moment of like scientific podcasts becoming cool, people tell you all this stuff you should do and like eat all these grains and things and do this and make a complete protein chain by eating these and then have a ketone IQ and then have this and then and then whatever. And it's like, yeah, it might help, but like you can't do all that and also have a functioning family life, work life, social life, you know, enjoy yourself and be happy. Like, it's not a reality for most people. If you've got a really, really nice contract from a really, really good running brand, then I'm sure you could force yourself to have some boiled eggs. But if you haven't, I think there's bigger things to life, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But it sounds like an awesome content. And I watch their YouTube channel really religiously. And I do find it very funny and very, I'm envious of their attitude in many senses of the levels they can push themselves to. So fingers crossed the whole group get some really good results. In fact, Reveille, were you with Reveille?
Yes, she's out there as well.
She's racing, it's tonight, isn't it? The 1500 Diamond League.
Oh yeah, the Diamond League.
Yeah, Doha, isn't it?
It literally starts in about 45 minutes from when we're recording right now, I think. So we'll have to, hopefully she gets the Olympic time tonight. So that could be good.
What is the time, if off the top of your head?
4:03 flat, I think, or 4:02:30 or something like that. So it's quick, but I think her and Georgia Bell are both in it tonight, and I think they're both very capable of getting it. So fingers crossed for the Brits.
Good luck to them.
Yeah. Last thing I will say, from a product standpoint, I know myself and Ben might not have spoken particularly favourably about a certain on shoe in the previous episode, but
it's called I'll say it because I don't give a shit. It's called like the Hyper 2 or something. What's it called? Cloud Monster Hyper or something. Cloud Monster Hyper. It's that one that's got like a big plasticky thing on the outside. It comes in green and green and orange. 210 barries on Pro Direct, that'll cost you. I tell you what.
You need to get this guy involved in some commercials on Pro Direct. Get Callum up there. He'll talk you through a new shoe.
No, Pro Direct and Sports Shoes, they've been ghosting me for years, right? So I'm going to say what I want about them now. How about this for a thing? Right, I've just Googled the shoe. This is incredible. Talk about commercial warfare that we're witnessing here. Pro Direct Running, £210 on the nose. Sports Shoes, £209.99. Wow. A penny difference, undercutting the competition. Jesus. Go on, Sports Shoes. Penny in it. Anyway.
Well, you'll see that across the board with basically every shoe. It's the same situation.
Oh, this is going to be so fun. I'm going to Google every shoe now and just see if they're a penny cheaper. Oh, they are. Rocket X2, a penny cheaper.
Oh, that's margin.
Anyway, Tom, sorry, you're about to tell a good story.
No, I was going to say, from a product standpoint, getting a little glimpse into the future of On. For one, I don't think, honestly, their headquarters is something special. It's like, you must have watched Grand Designs before, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Kevin McLean.
Always late, always over budget. That's all you learn from that program.
I love it. But every
couples
single...
Couples always break up.
Yeah. We've gone over budget by £750,000. Yeah. But we've got a nice gaff. But yeah, every single floor of their HQ is like a separate Grand Designs build. It's mental, honestly. There's also a lot of bowls of apples in the office that are just full. Every single desk has a big bowl of apples on it that are in like a perfect
decoration
pyramid. Yeah. I wonder if they're real apples. I didn't actually check. But you know, the full works, like the glasses that you get for just a little cup of water from the water machine, proper glass with On embroidered on the bottom of them. Just the attention to detail was doing all sorts for me. I loved it.
Did you nick one?
Yeah, no, I didn't. But product wise, yeah, they're like the methods that they've got for creating prototypes and how easily they can do it just like in-house and all of that sort of stuff. It's mind-blowing. And they got some very nice stuff coming out around the Olympics in like a few weeks' time, to be honest.
I've just sent a screenshot to the podcast group chat. If you have access to it, I don't know. But what's can you say anything about this shoe? This is what I saw on one of them the other day, and I thought, this looks like a tasty shoe.
I can't click on it.
Oh, can you? I've got it.
If I go off this, the podcast
Ben, you've probably got 20 pairs. You've probably got 20 pairs of this shoe, mate. You probably wear it as a with jeans or something like that.
What is it?
You've got every prototype under the sun. Oh, you probably take the bins out in this shoe, mate. I think something new's coming out, and you've bloody already had it on for about 4 years. It's basically Tom, what is it?
You'd have seen it, Ben. I'm not breaking anything new here. It's the Cloud Boom Strike.
Cloud Boom Strike. Okay, yeah. Helen Abiri wore a development version of that in Boston.
Yeah, exactly. Saw that, by the way. Gave it a little sniff. The actual signed shoe.
What, the one with the sock?
No. Not that one.
That's a clapped shoe, by the way, that one, isn't it? I'm sure the performance is good, but like, I hope running shoes don't go down that avenue.
But everyone said that about football boots. There was the Nike Magista, I think it was called, that came out, and it was like the first sock football boot, and everyone was like, "What the fuck is this?" And now every football boot under the sun is basically that sort of. Well, not everyone, but you know what I mean. It's common practice.
Do you know what's cool now in running though? Old boots.
What's that?
Like getting old Predators or old Copa Mundials. That's the trend, isn't it? You make a fortune on classic football boots. So what are we going to do if running shoes come all the way around? Some Streak LTs in 2032, you know? Just munching your
calves. Does it?
Munching your calves, but looking extremely fashionable.
I did see somebody at a group run actually wearing some streaks. It was a
good man.
I think it was in your friendly runners group or something like that. Someone was wearing some proper old school flats. I was like, oh, fair enough.
Yeah. No, I don't mind that. Yeah. But yeah, we're pretty loose on this podcast, but there's probably certain things that if I did say, I might lose my job. So it's probably not worth divulging too much information. But it's a good shoe, Callum. It's a very good shoe. I actually did a track session whilst out in St. Moritz in a sort of pre-production, not final version of a new super shoe from On. And, you know, I ran all right, considering the altitude and lack of sleep. I can't sleep at altitude, by the way. Apparently it happens to some people, but I did not sleep a wink for that entire trip. It was fucking horrible, to be honest.
That's Kenny.
That's the worst part about it.
Do you actually mean that, though? You didn't sleep a wink?
I mean, obviously I slept a little bit. But
all right,
one
okay.
Of those...
Well, that makes a massive difference. I've done weekends off 2 hours sleep. It's so different to getting not.
I've never seen... I know sleep scores on watches and all that are not gospel, but I've never seen a stream of worse results than that in my life. It was minus 10 on like the nervous system charge, the absolute lowest it could possibly be. Every single night I was there, every night. And it brought my 28-day average of sleep down by over an hour in total, just being out there for three nights.
Wow,
so,
you need to get an office job, mate. Pack it in. Yeah, you're on desk duty at ProDirect. You'll be packing the boxes or something.
warehouse operative. There we go. But no, it's a good shoe, Callum.
And didn't you meet a bloke who listens to the pod?
I did, yeah. Steve from On listens to the podcast. So if you're listening, Steve, thank you for the hospitality.
Yeah.
And some of the stories from the old days. Proper good runner was Steve back in the day. What I really like is when you've got some brands, you know, you might have a department where nobody there actually runs necessarily, or you know, they're quite new to the sport. Like the job that they've got is the first time that they've been involved in the running world. Whereas Steve has been around the block for a long old time. So he knows everybody. He knows everything about you boys.
He's technically my boss.
Yeah,
from when I used
Steve,
to be my
Steve, is he really?
Yeah, my tech rep in days.
Yeah, good
how
stuff.
How mental was it, Ben, that you were doing that, but also like doing stuff with other brands? Just to come in to think. Sorry, are you still employed? Is that still your job? Because I don't want to go into it if you are.
No. Technically, I do it every now and again, but not really my job anymore.
Isn't that mental? Surely there's some sort of conflict of interest. How can On be telling you all this and like you're working to promote On, but also is that not that never crossed your mind?
This is what I love about it.
It's separate from my social media stuff, though. So
what do you mean it's separate? How can Ben? Oh, sorry. So Ben Felton works for On, but Ben is running. Is a bloody he's whacking on Salamence.
It was before I even had a social media following. Really,
I'll try that. Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'll get sponsored by someone else for the distance project. I do road races for bloody Nike, but I do track for Hoka or something like that. Nah.
But it goes back to the ethos of On and the fact that back in the day, before they had spikes, before they had a super shoe, they openly let their athletes wear Dragonflies and Vaporflies in races. Like Tomo was cutting about in Vaporflies in road races, and it was open public knowledge that they allowed that whilst they developed their product. So I like the fact that from an On standpoint, having Ben involved is great.
I
like
love On, by the way.
Let me, the brands anyway.
I love On. On's one of my favourite brands, and I know Jordan Donnelly from On. I've met him and chatted to him quite a few times. I think it's absolutely at the forefront of everything running should be from an innovation perspective, design perspective, community perspective. I think they're tapping into all the things really well. So I'm not slandering. I'm just having a little bit of banter. So Steve, don't come for me. yeah, class.
But yeah, I think you're right. I pitched whilst I was out there. I was like, let's get an OAC specific social channel and YouTube page for the team, because the team, they all look unbelievable. They're all like bloody models in their own right. If you said that guy's not a runner, he's a sports model, I'd be like, yeah, fine, sounds about right for pretty much every single one of their athletes in that OAC Europe squad, but overseas as well. give us more content. Give us, you know, like weekly uploads, training
videos. Nah, because like that's unfortunately, I think that how do I say this? There's two ways of putting it. One, sometimes less is more, because if your personality is being quite basically, the less you see of someone, sometimes the better. If you know what I mean, as in,
is
like,
how you and Alice play things? Yeah,
yeah, literally. But like, just be drip fed stuff and be like, okay, yeah, that was nice. I see a video every month. That's like a good bit of content, you know. Like sometimes the more that someone is on camera all the time, the more they feel like they have to do stuff to act entertaining or whatever. And then I don't think it necessarily shows them in a good light. And I think for a lot of runners, having the curiosity and like the almost, what's the word, like the intrigue of what they're actually up to, I think is actually the main selling point. And if I was on, I'd be keeping like, I don't want to know the exact details of like Dathan's training with the OAC group in America, because I think the whole selling point is like, who fuck knows what they're doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's probably...
Yeah, I do know what you mean, but I'm just selfish and I want more running content.
Yeah, but I think it'd be watered down though. I think over time, if they uploaded every week for 6 months, I think eventually you'd be like, oh, it's not as, you wouldn't be as buzzing when they, you wouldn't be clicking as fast, you know, on the video to watch it. Whereas now, if you see something from an athlete that never really posts stuff, or they post once every month or whatever, I don't know about you, but I'm straight on it. I'm like, what the hell's training he's been up to? Or like a track session with this guy? Like, I wonder what he's like at a track session or whatever, you know?
Yeah, fair days.
But yeah, who knows, honestly. But yeah, sounds like you had a good trip, mate. Anyway.
It was fantastic. Yeah. The only other bad thing, I suppose, is it was in off season. So there wasn't much open from a food standpoint.
Went hungry.
We did go to a spa. That was nice. That was fantastic, actually. Little spa on the last night. Sauna. Cool. I saw all sorts in that sauna.
Lovely.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Just prototypes everywhere.
Dangling about.
That's what you call it, is it?
I just love it. I love how all gloves are off.
Bit of Swiss engineering.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. That's honestly, I don't know if this podcast was age restricted, but it is now. That's it. We're done for.
We've gone incredibly rogue for the last 20 minutes or so, haven't we?
We have. Have you got anything to add to this, Callum? What have you been up to over the last couple of weeks? How's recovery going?
Anything to add to the pod, mate? Nah, nothing. Not really. Not since the 1st of March. I'm washed up now.
I saw you doing some exercises with your not ruptured Achilles, but partially torn Achilles.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Yeah, it's progressing. I I went to the to see the surgeon last weekend, and he made Alice came with me, and he made her do basically. I don't know if I told the story on the pod when I got the cast first removed. When I got the first cast first put on, he made Alice sit on my knee and me do a calf raise to prove that like. It was that he'd done a good job in the surgery, basically. He was like, oh, I've put it all back together. Like, look how much weight it can take, basically. So,
did he sit on the other knee?
Technique? No, sit on his lap. Go on. Well,
if you think you can't pick up, like, what's the biggest dumbbell you could... They're not going to have dumbbells in the hospital, are they? Just lying around to do anything. So, like, he would basically... I went to the consultant and he was like, oh yeah, it's going well, like tendons connected, like it's got continuity, it's thickening nicely. And he was like, oh, like talk me through a bit of the rehab. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm like getting really good now, I'm doing 10 kg like for quite a few reps and stuff like that. And he basically laughed at me and he was like, 10 kg is not enough. He was like, think about the force you need to put through it. I was like, mate, yeah, it's getting better though, isn't it? Like I'm you know, slowly and all that. And he said, he said, right, Callum, sit on the edge of the, whatever, what do they call it, treatment bed or whatever. Take your boot off. And then he said, right, Alice, sit on his knee. And then he got me to do like calf raises. And I could only do like literally two. It was like maxing out my thing. And he was like, look, he's like, you've now got, it's healed enough that you've got the structural integrity that you can lift that amount. Like, I would not let you do that if it was unsafe. So you need to start like ramping it up, basically. Which obviously doesn't mean like just do 60 kg every day, but it basically means that I'm at a stage where I can now start being a bit more aggressive with the the rehab that I'm doing. So more reps, higher weight, like start actually trying to build up some calf. But mate, the DOMS is just incredible. Like, I can't describe it to you. Like, I don't know what I would have to do on my good leg to get the same level of DOMS. Like, I'd probably have to do like 1,000 calf raises. Like, it's like because all my muscles just gone. So it's literally like trying to build up a calf from next to nothing. And I'll do the rehab in the evening, and in the morning I wake up and honestly it feels like I've gone backwards about 10 steps. And then, you know, by the afternoon it's loosened off and it feels all right again. So it's not linear progress. It's actually like pretty painful these days now I've started doing the rehab, but hopefully once I build up a bit of muscle again, it should start to get a little bit easier. So yeah, I'm doing that. I'm doing a bit of blood flow restriction stuff that I mentioned on a few podcasts ago, which is all right. Nothing really to report from that. It's quite hard.
You're not able to walk on it at the moment, are you?
No. I'm still in the boot. So I've got 3 weeks left in the boot full time. And then I have a 2-week transition period where I come out of the boot. I don't know how that works or what it looks like. I assume you just walk around in your shoe a little bit more each day. I'm sure there's more science to it than that. But basically you gradually take off or gradually spend less time in the boot over a 2-week period. And then at the end of that 2 weeks, you should be back walking in a shoe as quote unquote normal. So that's what 4 weeks from now or 4 weeks tomorrow is hopefully when the boot should be gone for good. Which is, I think June the 8th, I worked it out at, is in, if everything goes to plan, that's when I should just be walking around in a shoe. So that'll be nice. Or a nice thought. But again, like getting out the boot's just a hassle. Everything's so fragile and like you just got to know, like security and independence of being able to just walk around and not have to worry about dropping things or, you know, twisting it or anything like that. When you're in the boot, you're just so locked in that you feel pretty comfortable. So yeah, that's kind of the next hurdle, but only a month left, which is pretty good. It's gone quite fast.
It sounds good. I reckon once you get walking around on it as well, those DOMS will hopefully ease up a bit after your like calf gets used to doing a bit more movement, like on the daily rather than just those exercises. But
100%. And it's just like, it just generally is sore, but you know, the more you think about it, the more it's to be expected. Like you're literally your tendon snapped in half and then you have to get it stuck back together. Like the healing process is going to be pretty brutal on that. And it needs a lot of blood supply to heal. So like you sometimes look at it and you think like, wow, that actually looks like it's got pretty worse. It's a bit swollen or it's a bit red, but then you remember that blood's just pumping in there to try and fix it basically. And that the other good thing, sorry, not to keep banging on about it, but that'll be once I'm out of the boot, I'll be able to start getting on the elliptical and start getting in the pool as well. So that's going to be a game changer for the cross training because I won't just be reliant on the bike. And I can start doing stuff that will be equal on my left side and my right side. So I'm actually really looking forward to being able to do some different stuff, which will be good.
Yeah, that'll be good. A lot more enjoyable than just sitting on the bike for an hour in the morning.
Yeah.
To get out and just give it, mix it up a bit.
A bit more enjoyable and just like, just better for me. Like I don't think the bike is great for runners, honestly. It wouldn't be my preferred, if I had a choice, it wouldn't be my preferred method of cross training anyway. I just think biomechanics is not, I'm not amazing. So once I can start doing some stuff that's a bit kinder on my hips and stuff like that, it'll be nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think when I had my stress fracture and I was doing like a few different bits of cross training, I definitely found the elliptical was the most like beneficial for running it in terms of the biomechanics. So I reckon once you get on an elliptical, you can slowly work the more running muscles as well, which will definitely help progress the recovery as well.
100%, yeah, elliptical, aqua jogging, all that. So should be decent, but
not long now.
Not longish, still a long way to go
until the next phase anyway,
in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, if I can get back, I mean, what do you, honestly, I've got no idea how long this sort of stuff takes, and I don't want to put necessary timeline on it, but
yeah.
If I can be walking and out of the boot by the middle of June, then how long do you reckon after that? 2 months after that? What would that be? Middle of August, maybe start running? I don't know though. Maybe I've got that totally wrong. So maybe September.
That sounds about right.
We'll see.
Even daydream about running again must be quite nice, because I'm sure when the injury first happened, running was out of the picture for such a long period of time. It's almost unfathomable, like the amount of time that it is. Whereas now you're actually thinking, it's realistic in the next 4 months. to be running.
It's weird you say that, you know, because I actually, like, I came to terms pretty quickly with like not being able to run. It's not really been on my mind, but equally, I've never felt that I'm that far away from running. Like I always feel like I'm almost there. You know, I know that's a weird way to describe it, but I've kind of, I think because the time's gone quite quick and I've been busy and I've had things to occupy myself with, I've always thought like, all right, I'm not actually that far away from running. I think that's what's motivated me to make sure that like, I'm not putting on a lot of weight. I'm still like working every other part of my body in the gym that I can, other than the injured area. Like I'm eating properly. I'm, you know, looking after myself because I felt like, right, I need to be ready because as soon as he says you can run, I'm running, you know, or as soon as he says you can walk and you're out of the boot or you can go in the pool or whatever, like I want to be ready for it. So yeah, I've never felt that I'm actually that far away from running, which I guess is a nice thing. But who knows, honestly, I could get a setback at any point really. So there's no point getting too far ahead of yourself because you're only one re-tear away from back to zero and another surgery. So we shall see.
I'm sure that won't be the case, touch wood. But no, it sounds like you're coming on good, mate. I'm pleased to hear it.
Yeah, nice little update, that.
No, all good, boys. All good. Ben, do you have time to do a couple of listeners' questions, boys, or do you need to get off?
I'm good for time. I've got five listeners' questions written down here, so I thought we could do the old pick a number like we did last week.
Yeah, go on then. Say I pick a number, I also answer that question, and we don't all chime in.
Okay,
does that work? Because then we'll do one each and then we'll be done because it is 5:15 on a Friday and this podcast is free, isn't it? This is our
team. Okay, then.
We're off the clock right now. Do you know what I mean?
In that case, Callum, you've got a choice of 1 and 5 because those are questions for you.
All right, I'll have 5. Oh, no, I'll have 1 because 5, you will have made your 5th one some sort of ridiculous question like, does Callum like fish fingers or something? So I'll have number 1.
It says, what position did Callum play for at Leeds Academy?
I'd always get crap ones here. I've always played centre mid when I was younger. And then as I got a bit older and wasn't as good, I played fullback. That's like the story of most people. But there you go.
Tom, 2 to 5?
I'll have number 3, please, Carol.
Oh, this is a good one. Who could do the most kick-ups between you two? I mean, I'm out of the question. I can do about 5.
I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but me, and it's not even close.
What wasn't it your job, for context?
Freestyle football.
Yeah,
it was your job to do kick-ups.
It's not. Yeah.
How many do you reckon you could do, or
did you do? Honestly, you don't count.
Once you get to that level, you don't count. Tom's doing literally thousands.
It's walking. It's the same as walking. You give me a ball now, and I'll do it until I literally collapse from exhaustion. Until a factor outside of simply keeping the ball in the air has any impact, the ball will stay left foot, right foot.
Unimaginable for me, who has absolutely zero ball control whatsoever. So, fair play to you.
We should have a kickabout at some point. Run it 3 ways, little football tournament. That'd be good fun.
Oh, that would be absolutely class, wouldn't it? A little 5-a-side.
It'd be carnage.
Yeah, oh, that'd be good fun.
Just me re-tearing my Achilles.
I tried playing football like probably about a year ago now, but the day after, I was so sore from all the not forward movements. Basically, your body is not used to it anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely your adductors broken. And like muscles that forgot existed are just in absolute pieces. They feel like they're going to snap, don't they? Feel like elastic bands being stretched the day after. It's horrible.
One last question here was number 2. What is the best way to achieve a 5K PB? Is it to do one peak race or to do several cracks at it?
You're answering it.
Oh, I'm answering it, am I?
Yeah,
I forgot that's what we said. I reckon.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, best way to achieve a 5K PB, one peak race or several cracks at it? I personally would go for several cracks at it. I'd have a race that I was building up to as the first sort of goal race, and then maybe like 2 or 3 weeks later, have a crack at another one. That's just me. That's how I like to race 5Ks. But yeah, any thoughts on that, boys?
Yeah, listen, I know we said that Ben was answering that, but listen, right, we need to get rid of this thing in running where people, I hate this A goal, B goal, freaking like, you must do 16 weeks and then you can race this and then you have a week off and then, oh, what's next? I'm doing half marathon training. And you know, like, just running it, it's a lifestyle. It doesn't exist in like a block to block thing. Apps like Runner and stuff like that will make you think like, oh, you suddenly wake up one day and today is marathon training. And now for the next 16 weeks, you're going to train for this one specific race. And whatever result you get is whatever result you get. It should be treated more as a process of, okay, you're going to do things for as long as it takes to get to a level of fitness that you think you're at. So if you're doing base building, you'll get to a level where, okay, you can do a certain thing. So if say in my case, right, let's say I know that I'm in a good level of base fitness. If I can do an 8 mile threshold, let's say that's the volume. So I'll do that training and that style of training until I get to that level of fitness that I think I'm at to then layer on the next thing. The next thing might be speed endurance. And then I start gradually doing some sessions and I transition into the next sort of phase where I'm doing some sessions that are more towards speed endurance. And then it might be another thing. So as you can imagine, during that period, there'll be different races for different things. You might do a 10K and you're not super tapering down and it's just part to see where you're at and whatever. I just don't think that it's productive to build up to be like, I have to be in peak physical condition for this one day, unless it's a championship and you're off to the Olympics or you've got a qualifying event or, you know, whatever. I think you should just treat it as more of like a holistic thing of like, okay, I've got an autumn marathon in mind. What do I need to do? What are the steps I need to follow to get there? Not 4 weeks this, 4 weeks this, 2 weeks this. I just think it puts you in a box a little bit more. But that's just my rant. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, I think it's a fair point. I think maybe just his question is more like in terms of optimal performance. Does he do just one race or does he do target multiple over like a 3 week period?
That's what I'm saying though. Like, think about what, again, no offense to the question because I do totally get it. But like, think about what we're asking ourselves there. Do I have more chance of getting a PB if I do three races than one? Yeah. You know, unless you're doing them on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all in a row, that, you know, then it's like you're giving yourself three times the opportunities if you feel like you're going to be the same level of fitness for each one. And that's where you've got to decide, you know, like if you run on June the 1st and you do a 5K, do you think that you can beat your time on June the 14th? Well, you should hope so, you know, because that's progress, isn't it? That's like, you know, what you're doing. But I don't know. If I were you, I would decide my summer goal is to run a fast 5K. What do I need to do to get to there? And then I would train until you think you're at that point. And then I'd go, right, what races are available? So rather than locking in a race, I'd go, okay, in the month of June, there's a few races that I've got my eye on. I'm going to decide once I'm at the level, or I'm going to enter both and only run one of them or whatever. That's the way that I would approach it. And I do understand here, maybe I'm overlooking the fact that you've got to book things and get hotels and build up to stuff. And some races are special. I might be totally not on the mark with it. You know what I get like when I get on these rants. But I just think that running content sometimes makes us think we have to do things a certain way. And it's that actually just do it. Just look at what professional runners do. You know, aside from major championships, they just decide as and when they're ready to race. Nordas was supposed to do a 5K the other day. The weather was shit. So he did a 1500 instead and he's going to move his 5K. You know, his whole training wasn't living or dying on that one day that he said he was going to do a 5K. So, again.
I think it's healthy as well to have multiple chances as well, isn't it? Because like, if you build up for one race, say you have trained for 16 weeks for one race and then it goes terribly wrong, like then that's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do like, I don't know, a 10-week training, you do a race, it doesn't go so well, then you do another race in 4 weeks' time where you try and correct what you did. Maybe you went up too fast or you weren't quite ready for the pace. You can try and correct that in your training. So, yeah, I would definitely be sided on the do a couple of races and see if you can improve on the previous one.
Yeah, I think, Ben, you've got some good content from last summer that shows that where you were doing your track races, where, you know, you didn't get to decide the date that those 3,000-meter races were going to be. They were spread out across the summer. You basically had to be there or thereabouts in fitness shape. And you said, like, oh, in an ideal world, the last one is going to be my quickest. Hopefully, I'll get quicker each race I do. And in each 3K race you did, you learned something like, oh, I went off too slow, I went off too fast. You know, I've not got enough speed, I've not got enough strength, whatever it was. And you just generally trained towards that event. And the races just came to you when they were available, rather than
definitely.
What you could have done, what you could have done I guess to answer the question, he's gone, right, well, I'm going to just choose one of the 3Ks and I'm going to build up to it. I'm not going to race anything else. I'm not going to do anything. And hopefully I'll just smash it out of the park. But, you know, you understood that it was actually more helpful to do the other races and stuff. But, yeah, great question, though. I like that.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I like that question.
Hopefully I'm going to live through that as well, because it's basically that question is exactly what I'm trying to do over the summer. The main goal for me in my head is to run a faster 5K. And the way I'm going to try and get there is just by being less precious about racing. And if there's a decent, quick, local race that I can get to pretty easily, it's not going to cost the earth. I'm not going to have to go to London and stay overnight. And, well, it's Battersea Friday night under the lights, so I need to be really serious about this. I'm just going to see what happens. And so I'm racing a 5K next Tuesday, actually.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be about 4-ish weeks.
Is that your lightning bolt
one? Last one. It's the Westbury 5K series, which is around an industrial estate in Westbury. It's 3 laps. It's flat as a pancake, pretty low key, but you know, I think the course record is like 14:15, 14:20, something like that. So it draws a decent field every now and again. And I'm just going to give it a good bash. Hopefully I'll run quicker than I did last time. And then there's another 5K on the 12th of June, which is the Southwest 5K PB series thing, which is the same place as Bristol Track Club. It's just their summer series. So I'll probably do all of them as well, if they work out timing-wise. So yeah, hopefully over the course of the next few months of the podcast, you'll see my 5K time go down quite significantly from first race back in well over a year, a few weeks ago, to a few races, a handful of races over the next few months, accumulating in preferably a faster 5K.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We'll see.
Lovely stuff. I'm pleased to hear it, Tom. I always wanted to see you do a few more races, so that is that's good to hear.
Yeah. Silly, really.
Class bit of content for the pod as well, which reminds me, thanks to the almost 5,000, we didn't quite hit 5,000, but the last episode was our PB, our post, what, season two PB? I
guess season two PB.
Yeah. Call it. Season's best.
What I'm trying to say is, yeah, season's best. There you go. The most listeners we've had thus far. So yeah, thanks a lot for everyone. And somebody also either commented or messaged us to say that we should make a habit of reminding people to rate the podcast at the end, because apparently that's the only time that people are ever actually going to do it, because they're about to go on their iPhone now and change to the next Spotify track or whatever they're listening to. So if this is applying to you now and you're thinking, oh, I've never rated something before, go onto the thing. You don't have to hit 5 stars. That would be nice, but you know, it's up to you. And do rate the podcast as well, because I don't know how it helps us, but apparently it does help us. So yeah, get on that, rate the podcast, tune into the future episodes, and thank you very much for everyone that's joined us on this journey and has put up with us after our slight hiatus of 4 months.
Yeah, exactly. Second that. That's probably a nice way to end things today, boys.
Awesome, yeah. Lads. Awesome. I'll say so. Yeah, great pod, boys. I tell you what, I'm really enjoying season two. Now we don't just talk about training. I'm really enjoying talking about some other stuff. So, yeah.
We haven't mentioned training once. Not one session, not one easy
running's
run.
Running crap
nothing.
In it. Overrated running anyway. Overrated. Shit sport. Right. Yeah. Have a good one,
enjoy
chaps.
The Diamond League, boys.
Yeah, enjoy Diamond League.
Speak to you soon.
Enjoy the Distance Project new video. See you soon, lads. Cheers, boys.
Right. Love you. Bye.